teachings today that would give rise to the precious attitude of bodhicitta, which means that we aspire to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings, even the ones whom we don't like so much. And in order to attain that state of enlightenment, we know that what we must do is to completely perfect both our compassion and our wisdom. So in order to do that, what we must do is listen to, reflect on, and meditate on the teachings of the genuine Dharma with great joy in our hearts, with great enthusiasm. This is called the precious attitude of bodhicitta, and giving rise to that, please listen to the teachings. So today Rinpoche will continue to teach us from what is called the last in the highest in the line of teachings of the great vehicle, the Mahayana Uttara Tantra Shastra, in Tibetan the Gyulama. It is the treatise that teaches about the Buddha nature. And the third point out of 10 main points about the Buddha nature concerns the result. So the two lines of verse that Maitreya composed about this say that the result is the perfection of cleanliness, of self, of happiness, and of permanence. So this is what the result is. And so then Rinpoche explains the first two of these by saying that what cleanliness refers to is the cleanliness that transcends both concepts of clean and dirty. So what transcends, the reality that transcends both of the concepts of clean, the concept of clean, and the concept of unclean, is called the great cleanliness, or the great purity. So that's the first one. The second one is the self, the great self. What the great self refers to is the reality that transcends the conceptual ideas of there being a self or there not being a self. So when these two conceptual ideas are pacified, then that reality is called the great self. So
denin jikten parpa nam lula tsama yin sambe tsanzen yam tsama ri hemba yore tsama ri hemba la ten de dunga be ge yore ti nyen bo nyen tu jo lo la lu ma tsang par go ba re ma tsang par he ba re lu ma tsang ba yin be jum tsen da ma do be ten zen go ba re ba re tekwa jin be lo la ne lo ka re tsang ma tam ma tsang ba nyi ka len de ba re tsang ma tsang jen ta len de ba re tsang ma tsang jen ta len de be tong to na tenen de ba tsang ma tam be pa re de sa
ma sa
dek so ya
dek so tu ji chi
ya
So ordinary beings are very attached to an idea or a concept of cleanliness, of wanting things to be clean. That's a normal human state. And in order to reverse this attachment in the fundamental or the foundational vehicle of the Shravakas, then what is taught is that we must meditate on things as being filthy. And particularly this concerns the body, because we have so much attachment to the body as being something clean and good. What we do is meditate on our own body and on the bodies of others as being filthy and disgusting. And this reverses our attachment to them, our desire for them. And so that's how it is in the first turning, according to the first turning of the wheel. But then when we get to the second turning of the wheel, the true nature of, or the true reality of the body is taught. And what the true reality of the body is that it, in its true nature, it transcends being something that is either clean or unclean. So it transcends both of these concepts, and that's what genuine reality is. And so this is what this is referring to. Then what is called the perfect self, or the transcendent perfection of the self. What is that? So what that is if we first look at how the first turning, or the vehicle of the Shravakas, deals with the self, it is that sentient beings are normally attached very strongly to a conception of I and me. And in order to reverse that conception, what is taught is the truth of selflessness, that there is no I or me. And so by that, we overcome our clinging to self. But then in the great vehicle, in the Mahayana, what is taught is that the true nature of reality transcends both self and selflessness. And so therefore, the protector Nagarjuna said in his text called The Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way, the Mula Madhyamika Karika, he said, self, selflessness, and so forth, the four, where are they in the expanse of peace? So where is the self? Where is selflessness? Where is some combination of both? And where is something that is neither of these two? These four, whatever combination you can come up with, in short, where are these in the expanse of peace? They don't really exist. And so this transcendence of both concepts of self and of selflessness is called the great self, or the perfection of self.
Tene chorvala deva tambe parde sembe hetorte jikten ba na chorva deva la dembar hi te do so dongal magavachi tene de do chorva de do landur se te kalekha pu chira jong re kalekha bu ya re te nyem bu nyen tu ju lo la chorva tamche donga du som re
ma so
chorva deva le chemba pa wa che do chorva tamche donga du som re tekpa chembe lo la tene chorva deva ta donga nyi le deva re deva me na donga yang yong ma re deva chembo yo na donga yang chembo yo deva chung se yo na donga yang chung se yo deva teni me na donga yang teni chaba ni go ma te se na deva ta donga le deva deva ta donga le deva ne lok to de turpa se na tene deva tambe par de se ma.
Then we get to happiness. Sentient beings in their ordinary state, in our ordinary state, we're always hungry, very, very much looking for happy experiences, and we want to avoid at all costs feelings that are bad, feelings of suffering. We don't want to experience any type of pain at all. So this attachment on the one hand to happiness and aversion on the other hand to experiences of pain causes us a great amount of suffering itself. And so therefore, in the first turning of the wheel, in the vehicle of the Shravakas, it's taught that all experiences are inherently of the nature of suffering. So therefore, we don't any longer feel like we must search out for happy experiences. when you regard everything as an experience of suffering, it doesn't matter really what happens. So we let go of our attachment a little bit. That's the idea of it. But then in the Great Vehicle, what's taught is that the true nature of any experience of feeling transcends both happiness and suffering. Because if we look at it, these two types of feelings are only dependently existent. If we never have an idea of what happiness is, we'll never have an idea of suffering. If you have a great experience of happiness that you think, oh, this is a very, very wonderful, joyous experience, that's what sets up the possibility for having a great experience of pain. If you only have a small experience of happiness, then correspondingly, the experience of pain will only be that much. If we never experience joy, we'll never have any idea of what pain is. If we never have any idea of what pain is, we never have any idea of what joy is. So these two are only dependently existent. They exist only in dependence on each other. And therefore, the true nature of any experience transcends both of these. It transcends our concepts about it. And this is called the perfection of happiness.
Tene takpa tambe parde sembate dubze ji chue nam ji ten pe mata pa ma hi te takpar hi takpar hi ba la ten te tene danda donga mandawa kangar mandawa na so ba song re ti ni bu ni tu je te kwa tene mata par song ba re mata pa te takpa me ba re takpa le do ba re te takpa cha ni me na mata pa ya me ba se na te pa chim bi lo la Tene tata madaban talent ever somewhere. Tena, ne look tata madaban talent ever don't tote, trubasena. Tene takba tamba parties.
That's
all. Exactly.
Dixon. We get to the fourth one, which is has to do with permanence. Normally, beings in the cycle of existence take things to be permanent and unchanging. So, this is our view of entities and of other beings is that. They have some type of continuity which doesn't change to them. But the fact is that everything is completely impermanent, and when we take things to be permanent that are really impermanent, this causes us suffering. And so in the foundational vehicle, what is taught is that everything is impermanent. There is nothing that remains, and everything decays. So everything is impermanent. But again, in the great vehicle, what's taught is that the true nature of reality transcends both permanence and impermanence both. It is fundamentally beyond any conceptual notion of what it is, whether permanent or impermanent. And so the practice here is to pacify our concepts of permanence on the one hand or impermanence on the other hand until we arrive at a state that is free of conceptual elaboration. And this state, which is free of the conceptual elaboration of either permanence or impermanence, is called the transcendent perfection of permanence.
Tene yeba te dekhi nyingbo yeba sele re sele te donga yinjong khe toba duenda meba le jino. Ta dekhi nyingbo yeba taam jumtsin rao nga su nyamnyong tene kan dokta kore. Nyamnyong tene tena Tene donga le yin jung, donga le chova cheva, donga je tang chede, donga le tandua, donga le trondua, kanga na sova le trovan doeva cheva. Tang. Tene ya tarpa toparan doeva, tarpa toparan doeva da, topar jorje nyamba da, tarpa de heva toparan doeva da, topar jorje nyamba, same cheva de, dehi nyimbu yabda. Kase dehi nyimbu mina, tene. Dongala, Job Jumtin Yomare, John Young Pingamare, Tarpa Tom Doje, Lo Chigamare, Jen Young Pendo.
Vasa.
Then Dabo, Dongala Jovata, Tando Jolo Java did same genelo did the Hinim with Matare.
Vasa.
Yeah.
Then we get to the fourth point, which concerns what is the function of the Buddha nature? What does it do? And so the two lines of verse that go with this say that there is weariness with suffering, and there is a great desire and a yearning for liberation. This is the function of the Buddha nature. So what this is talking about is that it is because we have the Buddha nature that we get weary with the suffering of samsara. It is because our basic nature is enlightened that we strive for liberation from samsara. Because if this was not our Buddha, if this was not our fundamental nature, then suffering would not bother us. You know, we would never feel like we had enough of suffering. We would never feel a desire for liberation. Also, there'd be no point in it. There'd be no point in being weary with samsara, suffering. There'd be no point in desiring liberation if our true nature was not liberated already, because it would be impossible to attain liberation, because it would not be our basic state. So this, that we have this weariness, that this weariness can develop, and also that we desire liberation, we yearn for it, are signs that our fundamental nature is the Buddha nature. So what this is talking about basically is what is the foundation or the basis for confusion, and what is the foundation or basis for liberation. It's the same thing. It's the true nature of mind. The true nature of mind is radiant clarity, and in its basic nature, it is completely free of anything that might stain it or obscure it. It is completely pure, and it has been that way since beginningless time. It's never been anything but completely perfect. That is our mind's true nature. And this radiant clarity provides the basis for both confused appearances to appear and also the appearance of liberation from confused appearances to appear. It's the basis for all appearances in samsara and nirvana. The Buddha nature contains within it the seeds for both compassion and wisdom. And it is inherent, these seeds are inherent in every single sentient being. So what is the proof of this? Well, even if someone has never gotten any instruction whatsoever about Dharma or about the importance of compassion, the importance of showing loving kindness towards one another, then this person could be a parent and have great love for their children. Naturally. They just have it. Nobody ever told them to have it. They just have it naturally. Or they have a great feeling of compassion for their relatives, or for their boyfriends or girlfriends. So this seed of compassion is what causes us to care for each other, even if nobody ever tells us to do it. We just do it anyway. It's our natural instinct. And this shows, this is proof of the fact that this is the basic nature of a sentient being. Because without instruction, you do it anyway. So therefore, it's part of our basic nature.
The next time, Nyingi sangwo yoba tela, tene nyingi gomtabda, nyingi gomba namwa su nyamne se na, nyingi mpikiri, tse mepam pikiri, katse mpikiri, sanjeje nyingi pardon pikiri.
Lhasa. So yesterday Rinpoche, last night, told us the stories of Mulchu Togme, who wrote the 37 practices of a bodhisattva, and also of the noble Tara, who as a princess cultivated compassion. And both of these people had great compassion at a very, very young age that naturally arose. And what this showed is that they had cultivated compassion in past lives. But this cultivation of compassion came from, it was made possible because first they had the seed of compassion present within them. And this seed is the Buddha nature. This seed is the true nature of the mind, which is the mind's natural radiance and its natural clarity. And then from that basis, the seed can be cultivated and we develop compassion and it just continues growing and growing and growing. As long as we continue to cultivate it, it will never stop growing. Until it becomes infinite, our compassion will continue to grow. And this is possible because the mind's own nature is of the nature of compassion. Also, we can see that children at a very young age, even if nobody teaches them anything, if their parents get sick, they have a great feeling of natural compassion for their parents, wanting them to get better. And so this natural outpouring of love shows that within the Buddha nature there is the seed of compassion. So then also the Buddha nature contains within it the seed of intelligence or of prajna. And so the proof of this is very easy to see if we look at the natural intelligence possessed by animals. No one ever trains an animal to do anything that lives in the forest, but they have a natural ability to know things. For example, a bug who lives on a certain tree knows exactly which tree that bug lives on, and they don't mistake it. They don't go to somewhere else. They go back to their own nest. Or a bird. A bird naturally can fly lots of different places, but it knows exactly how to come back to the place where it was before without anybody training it. Same thing with animals that live under the ground. They can tunnel naturally. They have this natural knowledge of how to make tunnels and how to go back exactly to the place where they tunneled before. And so this shows that the basic nature of beings is intelligence. The basic nature of beings contains the seed of intelligence. And this seed can be developed and cultivated through listening to the Dharma, reflecting on it, and meditating on it. It can grow, and it will continue to grow and grow and never stop growing until it becomes a completely perfect wisdom of the Buddha.
Tene teta hirap, the ninja the hirap, the samu yaba tela, tene ten privetap, the namin to the zode, ninja and tarsen hirap, tarsen, tarsen bacapso. Tene number low the mainland Sanjesi. Mingi gogodoa. Tila Sanjesi.
And so when this intelligence and this compassion develops to the point where it is completely perfect, then the person who has perfect intelligence and perfect wisdom is called Buddha. That's what enlightenment is, is nothing other than that. It is simply the name that's given to someone who has completely perfected their wisdom and their compassion. Both are necessary. Compassion is necessary to have the motivation to help others. Wisdom is necessary to know how to help others. And so when these two are perfect, then that's the state of enlightenment. So we can look at the example of the noble Tara, who, when she was a young girl, began to cultivate her wisdom and compassion. And then over the course of many lifetimes, she continued to perfect these qualities until she actually transformed into the mother of the Buddhas. She transformed into the mother of the Buddhas in the sense that she became the transcendent perfection of wisdom, the Prajna Paramita. And this is called the mother of not only the Buddhas, but the mother of all of the noble ones, the noble hearers or Shravakas, the noble solitary sages or Pracheka Buddhas, the noble Bodhisattvas, and the noble Buddhas. The transcendent perfection of wisdom is the mother of all of these, and this is what Tara became.
Tene chu nyamne sepe kapso semchen tamche chuka yomche me kompang lang koi parasa ti che do tene chu nyamne sege se sam semche gogono.
We need to give rise to a similar mind turned towards enlightenment, which means that we practice Dharma with the motivation that we want to lead all sentient beings to this state of being the Great Mother, to the state of the Dharmakaya, which is also called the Great Mother. And in order to do that, we will apply ourselves very earnestly to the practice of Dharma. So there's a story in Tibet about Chenrezi, or Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion. And first he was a monk whose name was Lodur Tenpa. And at that time, when he was a monk, he sought and received from the Buddhas the empowerment of compassion. So we talk about different kinds of empowerments. He got the empowerment of the Buddha's compassion. And this made his compassion increase miraculously, marvelously. And he made the resolve that he wouldn't go and attain enlightenment until all other sentient beings had, that he would stay a bodhisattva as long as there was someone still in samsara. And so his compassion was incredibly large, and it continues to, he continues to have compassion for all sentient beings even to this day.
The
So this has been a brief explanation of the third point having to do, which is the result, and the fourth point, which is the function of the Buddha nature. So now let's sing the song Auspiciousness That Lights Up the Universe.
Nyambo dunsong. Nyambo dunsong. Yeah.
Speak up. It's okay, just speak up.
I feel like if you harm yourself, that's just as aggressive. And isn't it difficult to help people when you sort of destroy your own posture or something?
Then a katsang rinpoche ki rinpoche ki sung sung then a rang la rangi shide la donang mepa mepa yina then a ningje yapo chagre rang la shide ye dopa yena then a ningje yapo chagimare then a yinang rang la nupa chena then a diyang yapo mares marang sam then a rang la nupa chena rangi shirav la nupa chena then a samchen shenda la khandes ropa chagre
rang la chakpa ta chada nigale dego
nasang
rang la chakpa yang me pa chada chakpa te chakpa re chada te hedang ko kong sun do re
nasang
chakpa ta chada nigale dego
nasang
rang la den bari hem pa chakpa me pa yang rang la maga wa me pa
nasang
nigale maga wa nigale dego
nasang
den de ba la da me pa ta tong ba ni ji tong ya po gong
gu nasang
대마도 텐텐다고 용고 말해.
맞아.
랑라 착바 메나더니 차라용스 그래. 차라용나 무가버래.
맞아.
계단 공수도 그랬대. 맞아.
So the point is to transcend both the mindset where we have great attachment to ourselves and also mindset of disregarding ourselves. Because to disregard yourself or to actively think like that, that I don't care what happens to me like that, that is a mindset of aversion. So that's also a klesha. That's also a mental affliction to dislike yourself. So the point is to transcend the state of both liking yourself and disliking yourself. So when you realize that state of mind, which transcends both of those conceptual extremes, then that in that state, compassion will be perfect. And the way that to get there is to cultivate an understanding of the true nature of reality, which is both selflessness and emptiness.
Da yo da de demba yo sana tene nyamung da dongam pe gre la sa da de mene me rang che de khata ke se len da ore je wa nga ma ne de ron de ne sama yung je da tene yo ma re sa na tene che ba re ta che ta ba da yo demba ta ba ta me ba ta ba ni de ta che ta ba che bi jo re di se na ta ma chola Chotamala dazo kherwa yendo, da denba yamare, tene meba yamare, nandong yirmi yamba, chotamala dazo kherwa ndawo samgogdo, chikogdo. Teshi na, tene takche tawa chegamare, nandong yirmi je ngeshi chegre, nandong yirmi je gomyogre.
Vasa. So if we look at the eighth order for Rinpoche's students, then it becomes very clear about what Rinpoche is talking about. It says, when you think I exist or I don't exist, that's how you fall into realism or become a nihilist. To know your true nature, think of a clear sky at night and on a beautiful lake, the moon that shines so bright. Appearance and emptiness, no one can separate. This is how you have to meditate. So what this is telling us is that if we think ourselves are something real, if we believe that the I really exists, if we believe we really exist, then what happens? We see an increase of mental affliction, we see an increase in suffering, because we believe in the existence of ourselves. On the other hand, if we deny that there is any self completely, if we deny that there is anything that goes from one life to the next, if we reduce our existence to mere matter and think that flesh and blood is all there is, and there's nothing else, then that results in a view of nihilism, in a view of extinction. And that's a conceptual extreme that is equally to be avoided. And so then, how do we arrive at our true nature? Think of a moon that shines on a pool of water. It has a quality of appearance, but it also has a quality of emptiness because there's no moon there, really. And so in this way, if we understand things to be like that, we avoid both these extremes of thinking that everything is real and also thinking that there is nothing at all. And so we need to gain certainty in the understanding that the true nature of reality is the undifferentiability of appearance and emptiness. These two things inseparable from each other. And gaining that type of certainty, once we have it, then we meditate in that certainty. And that's the practice.
Da nandong, nandong yemi chunang dava tabi yimbasena, jeva ngaman yendere jeva, jendene jeva samala rova tiyang, chunang dava rova tawa tang jipare.
Since everything is just of the nature of appearance and emptiness, then when we take birth, when we die in this lifetime and go to another lifetime and take birth somewhere else, wherever we came from when we took birth here, that's just like the moon moving on a pool of water. Looks like the moon can move and change places where it is on this pool of water, but really there's nothing moving at all. It's just a mere appearance.
So
it's just like when you're walking around a lake, and when you're walking around the lake and the moon is shining there, it looks like the moon follows you wherever you go. Looks like the moon is moving also. Then if you stop for a while and stay somewhere, the moon doesn't move anymore. It just sits where it is. Then if you get up again and you start walking, then again the moon follows you. It looks like it is. So really there's no moon there. There's nothing moving at all. It's just a mere appearance. And so when it was first moving, when we were first walking, that's like the moon going from one existence to this one. And when we sit down for a while and the moon stays in one place, that's like this lifetime. And then when we die and go somewhere else, that's like when we get up and start walking again and the moon looks like it's moving again. Really, it's just the appearance of movement. There's no real movement at all. If we know that our inherent nature is just like the moon that appears in a pool of water, that's all we are basically, it's just like a reflection of that moon, then we become very open and we become very spacious and relaxed. And we become free of being bound by the kleshas and the mental afflictions and suffering. Suffering and mental affliction can no longer bind us if we know that that's our true nature. And understanding that was the true nature of genuine reality, Milarepa sung different Vajra songs, like the song called The Eight Kinds of Mastery and the song called The Six Kinds of Confident
Expanse.
If we're dreaming and we don't know we're dreaming, then it doesn't necessarily result in a very relaxed or open experience. But if we can realize we're dreaming while we're dreaming, we can have a great time. We can fly in the sky. We can do all different kinds of things in this dream because we know it's just a dream.
Ranga rangin kuyang yin ba te den yin nambar tokpe drepar chur. Ranga rangin kuyang payang. Yin ba te den bari khen den yin nambar tokpe drepar chur. Den bari khen nam tokpe drepar.
Our nature, our fundamental nature is already open and relaxed. But it is our clinging to true existence that obscures that. Clinging to things as being real that obscures that.
Den yin nambar to le tor chor na pa yang kyang nang ni khar war jo.
If we can stop taking things to be real all the time, then the experiences of openness and spaciousness will naturally dawn. So that's how it is.
Yeah, that way.
Other questions?
Yeah. Jingyi.
The Thakpa Thang, the Thakpa Nyi, Le Khandes, Depa, Drongire.
Thakpa Thamma Thakpa Nyi Deng Gardare. Thakpa Chik, Thakpa Sichute, Jor Muro Vachik Gokre. Jor Muro Vachik, Ngopo Chiyo Na Thakpa Re. Jor Muro Vachik, Ngopo Meva Re. Ngopo Chempo Kapa Yo, Chung Chung, Dutin Sanyang Meva Re. Dutin Soyan Jorba Sogu Re. Dutin Trava Yan Jorba Sogu Re. Manjur Bangopo Tini Mebese na Takpa Chung Chung Yang Yamare.
Maso.
Takpa Tani Mina Mataba Yang Yungumare. Kangisena Mataba Sejete Takpa Latute Mataba Yagre. Tusa Mebese na Takpa Tini Mina Mataba Yang Yamare.
Maso.
Tisena Takpa the Mataba Niga Namdoka Tabare. Nelok Tada Matalin Deva.
Maso.
Melanje Kapso Takpa the Mataba Melam Tama the Chipare.
Maso. Maso.
Malam to do than Dorje Palam to Takpatangado. Long than Chuvotang. The name Marmintas of Matapatangado. In a Yanika Yomare. There's a view.
So, what permanence means something that doesn't change. Something that stays the same always is permanent. If we think about it though, there's nothing in existence that is like that. There's not one thing that is unchanging in the whole of existence. Big phenomena certainly change all the time. And even the smallest, most subtle atom is constantly changing from one moment to the next. It never stays the same for a single moment. So there's not a single permanent phenomena that exists. Since there is not a single permanent phenomenon that exists, there can be nothing that is impermanent either. Because impermanent, for there to be something impermanent, first there must be something permanent. Because impermanent and permanent only dependently exist. For there to be any notion of impermanence, you first have to have a notion of permanence. Otherwise, you can have no notion of impermanence. If you think about it, it's impossible. So, since there is nothing permanent, then impermanence has nothing, no base to depend on for its existence. So there's nothing impermanent either. So it's easy if we think about it, the example of a dream. We can have a dream, and if we don't know we're dreaming, we see a diamond or a mountain, and we say, this is something permanent. This is always going to be here, this big mountain. Then we see like a river rushing by, or a butter lamp, or a cloud. So that's why the protector Nagarjuna said in his text called The Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way, permanent, impermanent, and so forth, the four. Where are these in the expanse of peace? So these four possibilities are permanence, impermanence, both permanence and impermanence, And the fourth one is something which is neither permanent nor impermanent. None of these exist in the expanse of peace, in the expanse of genuine reality. Other questions?
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4. When?
The concepts that have been discussed just now, even yesterday, to a mind, it is really abstract. The concept of impermanence, the concept of the mind
What was the last part you said? I didn't
understand. To identify yourself pure or completely with another being, or any sentient being.
Like taking in...
These need to be very abstract concepts. And for a layperson like me, I'd really like to know how to give it a very practical direction. Mm-hmm. Would meditation be okay? And could you expand on the aspect
of meditation? Mm-hmm. Mi takpa tang ninje tang tongpa ni la sopa di le tang popa la tene nam tok tsam dawa tang nangidu mitse la kandis jar tukidu di hako kale kabores tene ditso mitse la kandis jana yabore gomna yabore am kandis jana yabore
mitse la jana gomna tangbo tawa yabo ngehiche tene nyamne zone yabore raba Jar chorte leka sabata leka ta jarte jumata vitting in zing gom de te nyamjala gomba capso tene semche ne lok tung banye namkata vitting in zing gom take by chimbi lola jar chorte dorje take by lola jar chor young tap samu mambu tela dorje take by young yamning on a kakizu raba Marve.
So the way to apply this to our lives, to give it some kind of practical resonance, is first we have to gain certainty in the view. What is the basic nature of things? And we have to gain certainty in our understanding of that. And then we practice. So the way we practice, according to the Mahayana, is that when we're working, when we're moving about, we meditate on everything being just like an illusion, just like a dream. This is called the illusion-like samadhi, or meditation on illusion. And then when we're actually meditating, when we're resting in formal meditation, sitting on a cushion, then we practice a meditation of just resting the mind in its true nature, which is like space, which is emptiness, without any reference point or focus. So this is how we practice according to the Mahayana. In the Vajrayana, then there are many, many different special and profound methods of how to practice. But first we need some preliminary experience before we engage in those profound methods. So, if we want to practice in a way that we are benefiting others at the same time we're doing whatever we're doing, then a very important text is this short text called the 37 Practices of a Bodhisattva. It has 37 different verses, and it says, how do you meditate when you're happy? How do you meditate when you're suffering? How do you meditate when you're feeling proud? And so forth. It has verses for every single experience. Rinpoche says this one text is probably enough for our entire life if we can really practice what it says.
Tene chepar to dunga la jana, tene kanga chigi de nāvā gēpā hēvā hēvā sōṁ tēlē yēnbē jīngēnbā dūpjā yōngyā yē yōrē
māsō
tēlā gāvā tāṁ trōpa jētē tāṁ dō lāṁ wā
māsō
tāṁ dō lāṁ gāvā tāṁ trōpa gōni tāṁ dō lāṁ tō pā
māsō
sīm jīngjī tōng tō tāṁ dō lāṁ tō pā gōrē tē tāṁ dō lāṁ wā tēlā tēne jāsē pōjī trūp tō jārvā gō tāṁ pē trōpa dōng yōrē trōpa dōng jīn dōng tē tēne nyamni yāpu sō na yāpu tō
māsō
tē gōndā tē trōpa dōng tē tēkē
māsō. So, in short, the most important thing for us to cultivate is how to meditate when we're suffering. And suffering, if we want to look at what suffering is comprised of, it's basically four things. Aging, sickness, death, and all the other difficult circumstances we can experience in life. So these four things sum it up. And the way to practice, if we want to have a basic idea of it, it is to embrace these experiences when they happen, to be very happy when these experiences happen, to be overjoyed when these experiences happen. And then through that, we accept whatever happens to us readily and enthusiastically. And so there was one great siddha, great yogi in Tibet, whose name was Gyalwa Gutsangpa, and he sang a song called The Seven Delights, which is basically about being delighted when anything bad happens. He was overjoyed. And so Rinpoche says that he will give this song to us tonight and we can sing it together.
Hey, hello, Dango. Hey, Gutsangpa Korang, Nava Kapso, hello, Tamri. Hiba Kapso, Yang. Shiva kapsu loma sungun sung tene korang, korang yaa lang lo chik tang, gemu chike tene nyangile de.
So when Gutsangpa was sick, he sang songs about how happy he was. And when he was about to die, and it looked like he was almost dead, his students started to cry over him. And then he rose up again, he opened his eyes, and he sang a song about how happy he was. And he laughed. Then he passed away into nirvana.
Then korang heba te malam rao. Rang ngola malam rao.
He knew that his He knew that his death was just like dying in a dream when you know you're dreaming. No problem.
Ta neba.
Second question.
Rinpoche, you spoke about the great purity as a way to transcend an attachment to things being clean versus dirty, which, if I got it correctly, you said the great cleanliness, and also the attachment to the happiness. I think in this realm there's a lot of attachment to or aversion to the happiness or suffering that goes with things being clean or dirty on a lot of levels. And I wish Rinpoche could speak a little bit more about the great cleanliness and also how does one liberate oneself from an attachment from having to have things clean.
Tsangwa dampa paro tu chinpa gi. Tsangwa dampa paro tu chinpa di Rinpoche gi. Tsangwa tangme tsangwe namtok le deba yina di tsangwa dampa paro tu chinpa re. Tene ngatso di tsangwa tang me tsangwa la shenba la tene dunga mambo nyongi du. Tene tsangwa tang me tsangwe namto le kandestro wa togire.
Tene tang ngatso lu te tsam tsam tsamma re samgu du.
Vare.
Tsam tsam tsokpa re san namto njuzun du. Yang tsam tsam lu je se te tsamma re nang tsokpa re san.
Vasa.
Tsam tsam nang tsamma re san se tsokpa re san du gu du. Tsamtan luji to te tsamma yapore me tsokpa re samudu.
Masa.
Tsamtan me tsamma re to tsokpa re samudu. Masa. Namdo njurwanda wa. Te namdo re mato nga ne ne lo tsamma tsokpa nyamba nyimba tayo re.
Masa.
Te nyamnyunga tingni hako re.
Masa.
Ya.
So, Rinpoche says we can look at our own experience for the method, to know the method or to learn the method of how to be free of these kinds of thoughts of clean and unclean. Look at the experience in relation to our body. Our body is just one thing. We have so many different thoughts about it all the time. Sometimes we think our body is very clean. Sometimes we think it's very dirty. Sometimes we think the outside part is kind of nice, but the inside part is kind of gross. And sometimes we think it's the inside part which is pretty good, but the outside part doesn't look so good to us. Sometimes we think the upper parts are the good parts and the lower parts are the bad parts. Other times we think the lower parts are the good parts and the upper parts are the bad parts. So this just shows that what is the body? At any one, it's, you can't say really what it is. It just depends on our thoughts about it. So this shows that these thoughts of clean and dirty are really just of the nature of a quality, meaning that there's no such thing really as clean or unclean. It's just a matter of what our thoughts imagine at any one particular time. From the thing's own side, there's no such thing as clean or unclean either. And so this is the way that, based on our own experience, we can arrive at the means or the method to attain liberation. So the true nature of our body is not that it's inherently clean or that it's inherently filthy. The true nature of our body is that it is the transcendence of both cleanliness and uncleanliness. It is of the nature of equality. So, when we really realize the nature of this body, which is that it transcends both our concepts of clean and unclean, then we'll never again have any filthiness. And so this is called the greatest or the best cleanliness. When we realize the true nature of reality, which is the transcendence of both cleanliness and uncleanliness. The way of practicing, putting this view into practice and cultivating it, there are many different ways to do that. There's one way in the Mahayana. There are many ways also in the Vajrayana. The most profound methods are the Vajrayana methods. So it's like that. Third question.
Last night you were talking about aspirations and how it's important to make aspirations. And I wanted to know, what is the power of an aspiration that causes it to actually come to occur or be in the future? Mm-hmm. What power, how does that occur?
Dangong Rinpoche gi munlam galchenpo res sungpa. Tene munlam gyapna maombala munlam mingire, minpacha.
Membere.
Tene drabu yabo yongire. Tene yabo minbe gyumsen karere. Munlam la nöpa yore. Munam gyapna dene maumpala drabu yabo togire. Dene munam gi nöpa karere. Drabu yabo togi gyum, drabu yabo chabe gyumsen karere. Nöpa karere.
Gyumsen te rang yabo chabe se do munam ja gogumundo. Da chombe de yabo togre.
Laso.
Yendo drupa la munam ja gogudo. Munam jam ni yendo drup togre. Yen la pin to na ying je jing gawudo.
Nasa. So the power of this aspiration is its altruism. When we have the notion or the attitude that we are making an aspiration for the benefit of others and not ourselves, then this is what gives the aspiration prayer its power and its potency to produce a result, which is that we will actually be able to benefit others and act in a helpful way. So the point is, we don't make an aspiration that we will attain the state of arhathood, which is only liberation of ourselves, but rather that we will attain the state of Buddhahood, which exists for the benefit of others. And when we make this type of aspiration, endowed with that type of compassionate attitude, then this compassionate attitude is what infuses the aspiration with it, with power.
Tene ariya taraya jarpu pomo yi dawa le chebu kapsu malam mangbuta bare tene be yindo dom na gaga do rang arso tango gumdo tang ke gumdo te malam jene bare.
So for example, the noble Tara, when she was a princess, when she was the princess Yeshe Dawa, she made the aspiration prayer that she would in the future be able to help others in a tireless way. She would never become worn out or tired in her activity performing the benefit of others. Then actually that came to pass. And now she tirelessly performs the benefit of others.
Ninji yendo drum na ya rang tang che nga so de ba yo na tarong dan zen yi ba tar.
Ma sa.
Zi yin re.
Ma sa.
Ta re zi yin.
Ma sa.
Yeah.
So if we pray, oh, I want to be able to help others and I want to get a little good vacation too in there. I want to have some nice rest stops along the way. Then that's a sign we still have clinging to self. So doctors and nurses who work in hospitals, they perform a lot of benefit for others for a few months, but then they need to go on vacation. So this is a sign that these people still have clinging to self because they need to rest.
Ha ha.
In what a prayer called the aspiration prayer of Maitreya, there's one verse where it talks about how we aspire to perfect the paramitas, the practice of the transcendent perfections, which are generosity and so forth. And the way we pray to do that, it says in the prayer, is may my generosity be free of self and clinging to self, clinging to the true existence of phenomena, in order to benefit, in order to ripen others, to lead them to the state of enlightenment, may I practice generosity. So the point here is that the perfection of generosity means that you practice it without any notion of the true existence of an I or the true existence of phenomena. And that practice of generosity is perfect.
Tene jimba dana nga jimba tama po yin sabba nga jata jimba ndewa la lom sem yung kri.
Vasa.
Nga jimba ndewa te ya po yung kyo sabba lom sem yung.
Vasa.
Tundu danzen da nga jata lom sem eba ko.
Vasa. Otherwise, if we practice generosity while we still have ideas or notions of me and mine and that the phenomena that we give are real, then what happens? Oh, I just gave something really great. I'm a big donor. So then we develop pride as a result of that. And we also think, oh, look at the thing I just gave. Isn't it wonderful? This object I just gave away, or money that I just gave away. So then we become arrogant again on top of that. So we have generosity mixed up with pride and arrogance. And so that's no good. And so therefore, we want to develop the understanding that there is no I and there really is no object given. And then our generosity will be pure. So when we think of ourselves as being generous, and we think about the wonderful things that we've given to others, and we think about wanting a good result to come to us from our generosity, then we still are practicing worldly generosity. We're practicing generosity, but it's not supra-mundane generosity. It's still mundane generosity. It's still stuck in the world. The bodhisattvas are able to give their eyes and their heads and their hearts, their lungs, stomach, whatever internal organs anyone might need, they just give it away. And they don't have any thought of, oh, I'm giving this great thing. Or they don't have any thought that they are wonderful for doing this. They don't have any thought that the gift they're giving is so fantastic. So their generosity is free of this arrogance and this pride, and therefore it is supra-mundane generosity. It's transcendent generosity. So it's like that.
It's
fourth question.
There's a description of the mind as radiant clarity, and I wonder what this means. I'm thinking that clarity means you can see clearly, and maybe radiant, I don't know what radiant means, unless maybe it means there's a dynamism, dynamic quality to it.
Dene ursalva yangi nupa am tsalva gi dunda yangi.
Tsara. Oye sarjingan len konde jana wa kyagre.
Masa.
Khyar yang oye sarjingan len kyagre.
Masa.
Tore yang oye sarjingan len kyagre.
Masa. So, this word in Tibetan, the most literal translation of it would be clear light. So that is the nature of the mind. And the clarity aspect, Rinpoche says, it's not like the clarity of looking at the sun or the moon and you can see it clearly, because the nature of the clarity of the mind is not something that has any shape or any color. So it transcends that. It transcends any type of concept about what it might be. And this clear light or this radiant clarity is the fundamental nature of reality. It's what reality is, in fact. There's nothing other than that. And the aspect of radiance or some type of energy is reflected in the fact that all of the phenomena of samsara and nirvana arise from this clear light. They arise within this clear light. Nothing transcends this clear light. So all of the phenomena within samsara and nirvana arise within this clear light, and they are liberated within this clear light.
Tene semde ne lo wo sa je don to ne ni khou na ya khang ba mu na na ne ni khou na ya ni khu pa kap so khang ba mu na na ge zuk so thong to ba yang tha reng bu zuk thong to ba zung yin thong to ba ten ra wo cha ba te semde ne lo wo sa yi ba ta re
ni nal jor pa gin yam nyong
re re te nan jor pa nyam nyong re
ma sa It's the fact that yogis and yoginis can stay in a dark retreat hut and see things very far away, very clearly. And so the fact that they can do that, even though it's completely black inside, demonstrates that the true nature of mind is radiant clarity.
Then they are not on Jita Chambuchin, Nandongana young, Tonsong Damada Kitiki Kaya Yurite, same Janelo was I.
Even as ordinary beings, if we experience very intense emotional experiences like fear, very strong, swift, powerful feeling of fear, then what's called empty forms can appear, different kinds of empty shapes which have no substance to them. And so this shows that the true nature of mind is radiant clarity. That's what's producing these forms. Also, if we have a very powerful feeling of desire for somebody else, and we think about this person again and again, over and over, then what happens when we're about to fall asleep sometimes is it's like that person is really there in front of us. That person actually appears to be there. And so this is also a sign that the mind's nature is radiant clarity, that it has the ability to produce an appearance which is very palpably real. Also, when we become so incredibly frightened by something that our thoughts completely cease and we're just overwhelmed by this powerful, so powerful feeling of fear, then Rinpoche says it's possible that the appearances from past and future lives can arise before our eyes. This is not just talking about a tiny experience of fear, but a very powerful one.
Nalam la sobatang, teni tonzok tundu hyagre, simjin jigsurovan tonan la soba hyagre, teniang oisai batare.
Karlam, marlam.
Karpo, karlam, karpo.
Nasa.
Hibakazu, chuturu kejuzu, mazu. Hibakazu, karpo, karlam, said the karlam.
Nasa.
Marlam said the marlam.
Nasa.
Lo parna candido.
Nasa.
Mendavado.
Nasa.
Nalam said the lo sena candido, natam.
Nasa.
Tendavo hyagre, hibakazu.
Also, it's said that when somebody is at the point of death, then all different types of shapes and colors appear to them as if they were really there. Like things just all of a sudden everything appears red, or then everything appears very white, and so forth. And so this is also something we don't have much experience of it because we don't remember our death experiences from past lifetimes and we haven't necessarily experienced it now. But this is what happens. And this is a sign that the mind's nature is radiance.
Operation. Nalang kaya ka tutu yo mare.
Masa.
Heba ka so kale kale hegre. Tene kala mala nalanda. Namanda mata hegre.
Masa.
T pigzong
shalam san operation tangi kapsu dene
re re
dene dung
dene lam san khen do do tu tu yo ma
ma san
kala mala nala da khar bu tu tu yo ma de lam san khen ma ne khe bu kapsu kale khe ma
san
na de khe bu kapsu
ma san
extend da wo na lower de khen do tu tu yo ma ya.
If, for example, we take anesthesia before an operation and we pass out, and then we happen to maybe die during that operation, then we might not experience those things. Or if we die in an accident very suddenly, we might not experience these things. But if we die a death that's a slower process as a result of sickness, then that's the time that these things will arise.
So
it's like that. Okay, so we'll stop here for today and we'll sing Rinpoche's song, Auspiciousness That Lights Up the Universe.